Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
On today's show, we check in with the Minnesota National Guard and learn about the Survivor Outreach Services. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Memorial Day is often referred to as the unofficial start of summer. More importantly, it is our nation's day to remember the brave men and women who gave their lives to ensure freedom for all Americans. It is easy to lose sight of those sacrifices as we're gathering with family and friends or fishing at the lake. Nevertheless, it is important we take time to reflect on these noble service members. I'm reminded of a memorial at Gettysburg recognizing the first Minnesota's historic sacrifice during our Civil War. On it, the inscription reads, "These dead shall not have died in vain. All time is a millennium of their glory." Please join us in this Memorial Day in remembering and honoring the fallen from all branches of our nation's military.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Kylie McArdle is a dedicated service member with a rich background in the military. After an esteemed career in the United States Marine Corps and the Minnesota Army National Guard, she now plays a vital role as a program coordinator for Survivor Outreach Services with the Minnesota National Guard. Outside of work, Kylie enjoys embracing the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hunting, or spending time on the water. Family is at the heart of her life, and she loves creating cherished memories with her kids. Kylie, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Awesome. Good to have you in the studio. So let's just start at the very beginning. An esteemed career with the United States Marine Corps and the Minnesota Army National Guard. So let's talk about your service first and hear a little bit about the Marine Corps and what led you to our United States Marine Corps.
Yeah. So I was actually supposed to go to college to be a dentist. Decided that I wasn't ready to go to college yet, and my dad told me it's either college or the military.
And like a good daughter, you listen to your father.
And I joined the military. I joined the Marine Corps after talking to some recruiters, and I loved it. I spent about 4.5 years there, and then I moved home and decided that I still wasn't ready to let go of the military. So my dad told me, look into the Minnesota National Guard, and my cousin, Colonel Cochran, was like, yeah, it'll be great. Let's do that. So I ended up joining. And then with the help of my recruiter, Sergeant Gerling, he got me a full-time position with casualty operations in the National Guard.
Okay, let's hold on there now. You're going so fast. We want to dive in just a little bit here. So your dad served, right?
He did. He was in the Navy.
And he had to have been surprised when you decided that it was going to be the United States Marine Corps as your route.
Yeah, he says that I should have been smart and joined the Navy, but
Marine and then Corps some was. People might say, well, you should have been smart and joined the Air Force. So I don't think
everyone.
Anybody can do that, right?
Yeah.
So the Marine Corps, was that the first branch that you looked at, or what was kind of your process to land on the Marine Corps?
Yeah, so I talked to a Navy recruiter and just didn't have the jobs that I wanted. And then we went and talked to the Army, and they just didn't really answer much of the questions that I had. And then my friend was in the DEP program trying to leave for the Marine Corps. And he
so
told
a
me,
delayed entry program.
Yes. Okay. And then he told me, come talk to my recruiter. So I did, and I loved it, and I enlisted, and I left for boot camp 2 weeks later.
So no conversation with the Air Force at all then?
Nope, we kind of skipped over that
skipped
one.
Skipped right over that. And
regret it sometimes, but no
but
looking
you had,
back.
You had a nice career in the Marine Corps. You spent a few years with the Marines.
I did, yep. I was stationed on Miramar in San Diego, so you can't beat that.
Oh, not at all.
No, and then I was admin, and I ended up working for the Adjutant General of the base on Miramar.
Well, now it's kind of a funny story. You have to share this. Admin wasn't your first choice.
It was not. I wanted to do military police because I wanted to be a cop once I got out and came back home. After looking into it, turns out I was 2 inches too short for the height requirement to be an MP. Turns out there's a height requirement to drive a car around base.
Yeah,
but
right. They didn't want to put the pedal lifts on there for you
right.
to be able to you know, push on the accelerator or the brakes.
Yeah.
So you ended up in the admin field, but it turned out good for you.
Yes.
You had a nice career, and then you decided it was time to come back to Minnesota.
Yep.
And you came back, and then you said that you missed the military. What'd you miss about the military?
Just the family that you get from it. The job's nice, but it's the people that you meet and all my friends that I had. It's truly a second family, and I miss that, and I just miss being able to serve as well. So after I decided, I was like, yep, we're going to do the National Guard.
And so did you start off then as a traditional member of the National Guard where you had the, you know, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year?
So I did that, but I pretty much almost immediately also got a full-time position as well.
Okay.
Yep.
And you said that full-time position was in?
Casualty operations.
All right. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. But so you come into the Minnesota Army National Guard, and what was the unit of assignment that you had, and where or what did you do?
Yeah. So I was attached to Alpha Company, 834th ASB. They were out of Arden Hills.
And the ASB is the Aviation Support Battalion.
Yep. Okay. And so I was supply. I ended up going supply when I joined the National Guard. So we got to do that. I was unit supply for the headquarters up at the ASB.
Now, you told me before we came into the studio that you thought it was kind of unique being a member of the Minnesota National Guard or the National Guard in general, because as a supply person, you were actually able to do some things that in the Marine Corps would never have been authorized for you based on the position you held.
Yeah. So in the Marine Corps, if your job is admin, you don't do anything but admin. But the unique thing that I loved about the National Guard was that I think no matter what your job is, you really get exposed to a lot more. So at drill, I was able to go drive Humvees and go drive the big trucks and experience kind of that side that I never would have gotten if I stayed active duty in the Marine Corps.
Yeah. And now, did you look at the Marine Corps Reserve too, or was it just based on that recommendation, again, from your dad, because he's given you good advice so far, join the military, right?
Yep.
So you went right to the Army National
Guard. Yep. Yeah, I liked the fact that I could do a full-time job, basically be active duty, but also be home.
Okay. And so supply. So did you actually perform in that function, but because you went full-time right away?
Yep.
Kind of, sort of. So did you do that like during the week and then you still had your normal job at your unit of assignment, or did you kind of get relocated?
Nope. So I would do the casualty operations during the week, Monday through Friday, and then on drill weekends, I would do just strictly supply.
So when you think about the Army National Guard, the Marine Corps, you know, you talked about the difference, right, obviously, of being able to drive the trucks or the vehicles, for example.
Yep.
What were some of the big differences that you really noticed about being on active duty in an active component versus the National Guard and kind of like the culture or anything like that? Any real big differences that stand out to you?
Not really, actually. I feel like the people that I met were all the same. The family that I was able to create in the National Guard, it felt like home.
Yeah. And I think that's the important thing. And, you know, a lot of people who, you know, obviously haven't served might not know that. And that is that sense of family that you're able to develop in really a rather short period of time,
yes.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. I think it was my first drill and you kind of find your people. Yeah.
And it's important to find your people.
Yeah.
And you have some people that obviously you work real close with. I mean, you have to. You're not serving now.
No.
But you still are a part of the Minnesota National Guard in that you're in a National Guard armory in the current position that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that I still get to work alongside all the friends that I've met. I still get to pop in and say hi if I have to be up at their armory. And I still feel like I'm a part of it, but while working with them.
And that's another great thing. So I do have to ask this question. You know, when we talk to people who leave the military after a certain number of years or whatever their service is, you know, they often will say, I really miss the people. So you still have the connection to the people.
Yep.
So my question to you is, do you miss the weekend drills?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. never want to do that again. So I love being on this side of it.
It's interesting how many things landed on weekend drills or assemblies. And,
it's amazing.
And now you probably fill all your weekends up with other stuff, though, don't you?
Oh, yeah. They're still very busy. Yep.
Yeah. And so you have children?
I do. I have three.
Okay. And how old are your kids?
My son Ethan is 10. My daughter Adelena is 9. And my youngest Mason, he'll be 3 in June.
Wow. So you've got your hands full.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's good then, maybe in a sense, right, that you have the opportunity to still work with the Minnesota Guard, but you don't have the uniformed requirements, because three kids, in order for you to do the things like creating cherished memories, all that time is precious.
Yep. Yeah. I love not being obligated on the weekends, and I can just spend it with the kids. Yep.
All right. Perfect. So what we're going to do, Kylie, is we're going to take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about some of your experience with casualty operations, and then I really want to get into the survivor outreach services that you provide, okay?
Perfect.
All right. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me is Kylie McArdle, and she's the program coordinator for Survivor Outreach Services with the Minnesota National Guard. And Kylie, before we went into break, we kind of got the rundown of your military service with the Marine Corps, with our Minnesota Army National Guard, your family. And I do want to say thanks for your service. We appreciate that. One of the things that you had mentioned in the last segment is when you came into the Minnesota Army National Guard, you kind of landed a full-time job almost immediately, and that was in the casualty operations. Is it the center, or what did we call it?
Section.
Section. Okay. Yep. And so, you know, we can assume what that means, but maybe you can just kind of tell us a little bit about what casualty operations was and in what your role was.
Yeah. So in that section for the National Guard, we would process the benefits for a deceased soldier and kind of help their families along with that process. And then we also ran the training for the soldiers that, like you see, go and notify the families. So with that training, and then we also assign those members to go and notify families when we get new cases.
And so as a member of the Minnesota National Guard at a certain level, it's a requirement that you would receive casualty notification officer training and then casualty assistance officer training. So that's the training you're talking about.
Yes.
That you would provide.
Yep.
And these are the people that are that direct contact with the surviving family member, whomever it is listed from the service member's records.
Yep.
And so you would then work in conjunction with an outside entity, though, right? Because it's not like, you know, Minnesota is controlling all of the assets or resources for casualty notification. Who would you guys work closely with?
Mostly with the Casualty Assistance Center in Fort Leavenworth.
Okay. And then through that, you would help to select or assign whether it was the notification officer or the assistance officer, and then kind of make sure they have all the resources that they need. And, you know, what an invaluable tool that is, and, you know, something that, you know, you don't ever want to have as an assignment.
Right.
I've had the opportunity to be an assistance officer twice. I've never done the notification piece. And, you know, I've talked to many who have, and I don't know which one would be easier, because it's never easy.
Neither of those jobs would be easy.
Yeah. No. So how long did you work in that role?
I was there for about 2.5 years.
Okay. And what did you appreciate about being able to be in a role like that?
I loved going from being active duty to then the National Guard and being able to just help the soldiers' families. At the end of the day, I would hope that someone that cared as much as like I did, or Sergeant Wright, my boss at the time, just to help our families process these benefits that they, the worst time in their life, they're not thinking, they don't know, and just to be able to help them do that and get them as much as we possibly could. And help them in any way.
And did you work with families regardless of the cause of death of their service member? If they were serving, would you provide that service?
In casualty operations at the time, it was just basically who was entitled to benefits.
So if they died like in the line of duty or
yes.
something like that?
Yep.
Okay. And then, of course, it's important because there's a lot of benefits. Many family members don't even know,
yes.
you know, from insurance to, I don't know, fill in the blank. There's just there's a lot of different things. And then other benefits that may open up depending on the cause of death.
Yes.
And so you'd be there from A to Z with the person going out to do the notification and the assistance. And then, of course, there for the family if they had issues as well.
Yep. So it was more of like a backdoor role. We weren't very involved like Survivor Outreach Services is now.
Okay.
It was very brief and minimal contact with families.
And I think this is a great way to transition to Survivor Outreach because you spent that time. So now you understand how the notification process works. You understand how the casualty assistance process works. And you're seeing and hearing the questions and the issues and seeing kind of that big picture from those two entities directly to you, but you don't ever get to interact with the family?
No. And I think with casualty operations, you work alongside with Survivor Outreach Services. It kind of goes hand in hand because once you get a case, you notify Survivor Outreach Services and then they take on whatever their daily roles were for that. And then you kind of sit back. So being able to have the knowledge that I got from casualty operations really helped set me up to be able to help families a lot better, I think, once I moved over to Survivor Outreach Services.
Okay, so you said that you were at the casualty operations for 3 years?
Yeah, about.
And then how long have you been with the Survivor Outreach?
Going on 5 years.
Going on 5 years. Okay, so you've been involved with this for quite a while.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Survivor Outreach Services and tell us a little bit about the background. You know, what is it? Who do you take care of? Who do you serve?
Yeah, so we are an Army program that's designed to support families of fallen soldiers. It's any manner of death, any military component, whether they're active, guard, reserve. It's basically just anything. As long as their family resides in Minnesota, then we are there to help them.
That was the question I was going to ask. Is it a Minnesota-focused entity?
Every state has an Army Survivor Outreach Services if they need it. But for Minnesota, Army Survivor Outreach Services, it's just Minnesota.
And so do each of the branches have something like this? Do you know?
Each branch has something like it. I'm not sure as to what extent they are, but we... If we have a Marine Corps family reach out to us, we can assist them as well. We don't reach out to them, but if they need something, then we can definitely help any other branch as well.
And so because you work closely with the Casualty Assistance Center, then, of course, you get the notification.
Yep.
How do you find out about others that might not have been processed through or worked with directly with the Casualty Assistance Center?
Like for just the Army themselves. Yeah. So if it's active duty, the Casualty Assistance Center, they'll notify the state and then they notify us. If it's a Guard or Reserve family, then the state's Casualty Assistance Program will then usually reach out to us and let us know.
Okay. And so, you know, the unfortunate happens and we have a soldier that... for whatever the reason is, they've lost their life. You've been notified now that, hey, we've had a soldier who's lost their life. Here's the information for the family. How soon are you reaching out to them?
So if they have a casualty assistance officer, then they usually do the first introduction. But then we can reach out pretty much immediately and just introduce ourselves, let them know if there's anything they need. They can reach out to us. But in the meantime, they do have their assistance officer. And then after that, once the military has done their side of things, then we take over their long-term support, and we are there for forever as long as they need us and for anything they need.
And so, like, what's the primary thing that you're doing for a family?
In the beginning, if they come in to any kind of monetary thing in the beginning, then we will help them with any finances. We have finance counselors that we have for the state that can help them. Or they just need benefits. That's a huge one. Figuring out what they're still entitled to, what they can get now after the fact. And it's just being there. If they need grief counseling, they call us. And if they just want to talk to us, we'll talk to them. Or if they want to get it set up with an actual therapist, then we can get them the resources for that as well.
And so you're kind of like the one-stop shop, so to speak, of, hey, here's the issue I'm having as a surviving spouse or family member. I don't know how to do this, or I just need to talk to somebody. You're the one or someone in your office is going to be able to find what the right resource is. Because you don't have that resource in-house.
No, we outreach to the community and all of our, like Beyond the Yellow Ribbon or the county VSOs, the Veteran Service Officers or the VA, whatever they need, we'll find them a resource.
Okay. Yeah, because that's another thing, right? You don't want to really duplicate efforts, right? If somebody else can do it, and they probably can do it better, then let's go ahead and ask them if they want to partner with us.
Yep.
So you're working then with civilian entities as well to provide some of these services.
Yep.
And are they generally at no cost then?
Most of the time for the families, depending on their situation, it is.
Okay. And statewide resources, you have resources available pretty much every corner?
Yeah, we try to make sure we have as much as possible to cover the entire state. And I think we have it just about all covered.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, hey, this is a great spot to take another break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about, you know, the ins and outs and other things that you do within this Survivor Outreach program, okay?
Perfect.
All right. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. We are going to continue our conversation with Kylie McArdle here in just a little bit, but first it's time for the Commissioner's Corner. It's a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Brad Lindsay.
Memorial Day is a time to honor the memory of all military members who gave their lives service to this country. No greater sacrifice could ever be asked of an individual. Their service has impacted the life of every single citizen of this great nation. It is for that sacrifice I salute my fallen comrades this Memorial Day. At the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, we can't even begin to contemplate the world today had those comrades not stood fast against our enemies throughout history. It is never over. Missions end, but legacies are left behind, and the pain of their absence endures. You are invited to join us at our four state veterans cemeteries in Duluth, Little Falls, Preston, and Redwood Falls on Sunday, May 25th, the Sunday before Memorial Day 2025. For details about these public gatherings and formal programs, visit minnesotaveteran.org/events. All gave some gave all. These heroes remain a constant reminder of the price of freedom.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. In the studio with me is Kylie McArdle, and she's the program coordinator for the Survivor Outreach Services with the Minnesota Army National Guard. And Kylie, we were talking about some of the services that you're able to provide. You talked about you're there from day one until whenever. So I would imagine you've got families you've been working with, or at least the agency's been working with, for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of families that have been involved in the program for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about the services that are requested, and, you know, you kind of went through that catalog of different things that you can provide, are there some certain things that, you know, really stick out to you that are generally like an immediate need, maybe early on, but then later on there are some other things that maybe they transition to requesting or needing?
Yeah, later on, what we find is that education benefits, if they're entitled to any education benefits, whether it be a spouse or a child, that becomes a lot of questions later on, especially when the child's about to turn 18 or 17 going into college. If they have any more changes in life events, if they do need more financial assistance, we get those and we can set them up again with a financial counselor and they can help out. And then just another benefit that we do have is being able to connect them with other families throughout their entirety in the program, and just being able to connect on loss of their loved one or a soldier, and if they are able to connect with a family that's had the same type of death, that's another tight connection that they're able to form.
Yeah, I think that community is extremely important. We'll talk about, you know, maybe some of the events that you do for survivors and where you can build or where they can build those relationships.
Yep.
But before we go into that, you know, I know that the work that you do is impactful. And, you know, it's a horrible situation, but a resource that's needed because these things do happen, especially for those of us that have served. Yep. There's always that opportunity or that risk that you take when you get deployed. That's something, you know, the worst could happen.
Yeah.
So what kinds of things really kind of stick out to you about the work that you do and the feedback you get from the people that you serve?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it makes it all worth it. When you have a family come back to you and tell you that they could not have gotten through the worst event in their life without you, knowing that you were there 24/7 for anything they need, if they just need to talk, if they wake up and they're just going through something and they don't know what to do, they can call you. And having families that want nothing to do with the program in the beginning, but you continue to just reach out and be like, hey, we have an event. If you want to come, come. And over the years, we've had families that finally show up to these events and they tell you that it has been so unbelievably life-changing that they're able to connect with these other families, and it's really helped them grieve.
I think that, you know, that's one of the stages maybe a lot of the families go through, and that is they want nothing to do with the military because they blame the military for the loss of their loved one. And I can imagine how difficult that would be. But you are a civilian who just happened to have served. I'm assuming not everybody who works in a survivor outreach position has served.
Yep.
So that must be just a little bit, maybe, I don't know, take the edge off. I don't know really how to phrase that, but because you're not the Army, you're not the, you know, fill in the blank service.
Yep. Yeah. We don't show up in a uniform. We're just there. And I think that helps. Some families don't want to see the uniform ever again, if that. And I think just us being there on the civilian side can really help connect us.
So before, in the last segment, we were talking about some of the services and stuff that you are able to try to connect people to. Let's talk a little bit about the collaboration that goes into it, because someone has to develop these relationships with fill-in-the-blank entity to provide whatever that service is that you want to provide to, you know, one of the survivors. So what does that look like from your perspective? Who kind of heads that up? How does it get done?
A lot of the time we have like an individual or a company or an organization that reaches out to us and asks, how can we help? We want to be involved. We want to support these families. So we've had like the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. They're extremely helpful. They help us put on our Christmas event in Christmas time. And then we've had Toys for Military Kids. They reached out to us and they actually provide all the toys for the kids who come up to our Christmas event that year. We have a riverboat event for our families in June. And there's about 9 states throughout the United States that have this event because the riverboat captains have donated their entire boat for a day. And then we have organizations or an individual who donate the lunch for that event for the families. And then like the twins, we have a really cool twins event that we get to do. The owners donate their suites and we're able to bring our families to that on Military Appreciation Day or the state fair. They reach out and we are able to get tickets for our families to go. So it's really just a matter of most of the time just people reaching out and being like, how can we help? We want to help.
And so that's really the key then is you maybe not be doing outreach targeting specific entities. You're getting people coming to you saying, we want to help.
Yep.
So there's somebody listening right now. They have a resource, whether it's money, whether it's a riverboat or, you know, something like that. And they're like, you know what? I'd really love to have these Gold Star families come out, and I want to be able to show our appreciation to them for the sacrifice that they've made. What do you tell those people? How do they get a hold of you, or who do they need to let know that they want to somehow support?
Yeah, so if you are listening and there is something that you feel like you can do or you want to help, you can reach out and look up the Minnesota National Guard Facebook page and shoot them a message, and then they can get you connected with the Survivor Outreach Services program.
Yeah, and I think in if someone goes to our website after this show, we'll have a link to back to the Minnesota National Guard as well, so people would be able to get there. And so I would imagine it must be nice. It must feel nice, not only as a service member yourself, but also as somebody who now is supporting survivors. How does it feel to have that kind of support, though, from the community and from these entities that you've already mentioned?
It's unbelievable, honestly, just looking back and knowing that if I would have passed while I was serving, that my family would have been supported in so many amazing ways. It just really makes you thankful and appreciate the community that we do have here in Minnesota.
And do you reach out to the families with these events? Is it stuff that you're posting like on a Facebook page for them? How do you communicate back to the families once you've connected with them and they might be eligible for some of this stuff?
Yeah, we have a closed private Facebook page for our families. So we post stuff on there. And then we also do a newsletter a couple times a year with our events coming up and how they can apply for any of those events that they're interested in, or events in the community if they want to go and attend. Or we email distro lists,
sure,
kind of the same thing, between mail and email for that. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take another break. And then when we come back, I want to get into a little bit about what you want our listening audience to know about your program. Okay.
Right.
All right. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me is Kylie McCardle. She's the program coordinator for Survivor Outreach Services with the Minnesota Army National Guard. And Kylie, we've got just a few minutes together now here left in this segment. You talked again about the services. I think extremely important for people to know that you're there from day one until they tell you they don't need you anymore.
Yep.
And then, you know, we talked about, you know, some of this coordination with other entities and things like that. But one thing that we really haven't truly dived into, and I think it's kind of important, and that is maybe some of the misconceptions that people have about who you are actually here to support or why you're here to support them. So can you kind of talk through maybe some of those misconceptions, the things that you want people to know about those that you're serving?
Yeah. So when people think of our program, I feel like they often think we just serve like KIAs, killed in action, like active duty, but we are here for every manner of death. But there's a lot of times where it's an expected death, where they're ill, or it's an accident, whether it be a car accident or a training accident. And Gold Star is very huge, but we also have a whole nother set of survivors that aren't included in the Gold Star, but they are still very much thought of and helped. And their loved ones, we take care of just as much as the active duty deaths. And a lot of time people don't realize that it's everyone. It's killed in action. It's active training accidents and car accidents, and they have cancer.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of more than just like an active duty death.
Yeah, because I think that most people are very familiar with the term Gold Star family,
yep,
right? Someone who's lost a loved one who was killed in action,
yep,
generally in a time of combat or something like that. But important to know that if your loved one is serving, whether they're on orders or whether they're on active duty at the time, if they are a member of the reserve component, for example, or the National Guard, for yep, example, you're still here to support them and their families,
yep,
throughout, from day one to whenever.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. We're there for them in every capacity as a Gold Star family. They're still invited to our events. We're still going to help them navigate if they are entitled to benefits or if they need grief counseling, anything like that. We will help them.
Because benefits will vary based on, yep, the cause of or the type of death. But that's what you're here for, is,
yep,
to help navigate that.
Yes. Navigate in the worst time of their entire life, a journey, right, that they didn't choose for themselves.
Yeah, so. Right. 100%. So once again, let's talk about how people can get involved, because we were talking about the funding stream before.
Yep.
And it's not like you have some unlimited budget to go out and rent riverboats, for example. And the reason why you want to do things like that is to create this networking opportunity so we can get people together with shared experiences, right?
Yep. Yeah. Our events that we put on, it's very much for the families, but at the same time, we are all there to honor and remember their lost loved one. And when we have the community that's able to reach out, and you want to do a picnic for our families, you want to do something in any way, whatever you can do, if it's something small, something big, it is appreciated by these families no matter what it is.
Yeah. Do you know off the top of your head at any of these events, like, what kind of crowd are we generally talking about? I mean, I know it varies from a, you know, event to event, but,
right.
you know, are we talking on average you have, you know, 20 family members, 150 family members? What do you think?
Yeah, so it definitely depends on the event and how many we can have. The Riverboat event is about 250 people that we're able to fit. So it can be 50 families. It's so many, and we try to get as many families there as possible. Or like our twins event, that really varies at how many suites that we do get donated. But most of the time, the twins are amazing. If we don't have enough suites for our families, we can get tickets for families to sit as well. So that anything that we can work out for these families, we definitely do our best to get as many possible so that they are able to get together. It's very important for them to that's a new family for them that they can connect with. So,
all right. So one more time, if somebody's listening right now, or they know somebody that has a resource that would be very beneficial to the people that you're serving, how would they get in contact with you, or what would they do?
Yeah, the best way that they could contact us is just look up the Minnesota National Guard Facebook page, shoot them a message, and they will get it to us.
Okay, perfect. Well, Kylie, one, thank you for your military service, and then thank you for continuing to serve our families that you know, have paid or have, you know, undergone a big sacrifice for the loss of their loved one who paid the ultimate sacrifice. And so thanks for what you do, and we really appreciate you spending some time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for your service as well.
Appreciate that. From the Minnesota Patriot Guard, calling in from the flag line is Craig Uglund. Craig, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you much, Doug. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, good to have you on. And, you know, as we are sitting here preparing for Memorial Day, I know that that's the big topic for the day that you'd like to talk to. And, you know, I had you on, I mean, it seems like just yesterday, but it's been, you know, almost 4 weeks, I think, now. And, you know, we talked then that you guys were ramping up, getting things ready, and you talked about the shift to the supporting state veteran cemeteries. And so maybe you can kind of give us a little bit of a rundown of some of the things that the Patriot Guard is doing on Memorial Day or that weekend this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned last month, because we receive requests from so many towns across the state, and we just don't have the numbers to support that we only do our flag lines at the state veteran cemeteries and at Fort Snelling. The state veteran cemetery programs are all on Sunday so that they don't interfere with local memorial programs on Memorial Day, Monday. And all of the information, if you want to attend, is on our website, mnpatriotguard.org. And it's a good chance to kind of refresh the batteries, or if you've never done a flag line before, it's a great first experience. Every program I've been to has great speakers, and they're very heartwarming experiences. But if you're not able to make one of those at the state cemeteries, look up your local service club and support one of your local programs. You know, not necessarily as a Patriot Guard member, but just as a civilian or a veteran to support those families that lost active duty members.
Yeah, and you know, one of the neat things is that even on this show, we've been allowed by iHeartMedia to broadcast once again live on Memorial Day morning from 6 to 9 here locally on KTalk AM 1130, and so we'll be able to talk a little bit more about at that point the federal program that'll be going out at Fort Snelling, and as you stated, the state veteran cemeteries will be holding their programs on Sunday. And I just want to make sure we touch on it one more time. This is a good opportunity for someone to volunteer for the first time with the Patriot Guard and just check it out and see. All you got to have is that 3x5 flag, right?
That's exactly it. Have an American flag, 3x5. You don't have to be on a motorcycle. You don't have to be a veteran. Our flag lines are open to everybody. Our only requirement is that you are there to show respect for our fallen military.
Craig, just, you know, about a minute and a half here, Memorial Day, right? We know what the Patriot Guard is doing. But what does Memorial Day mean to you? Why is this important to you?
For me, it's a day to reflect on all of the missions that I've been to personally of soldiers and Marines that have been killed in action, and to show our continuing support to their families, to their loved ones that they remember their fallen every day. And the least we can do is remember their fallen one day a year. And it's really a time to reflect and be thankful for those families' sacrifices, the families that were left behind. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, great thoughts. And, I could hear some emotion in your voice there, too. And, whether you've served or you haven't served, I think that just thinking and reflecting upon those who have and that sacrifice that they've paid so we can continue to enjoy, you know, the freedoms that we have in this country. That has to touch your heart, doesn't it?
Very much so. It's an important day. And I think people get lost in the sales and the picnics and vacations. And even if you do those things, which is great, just take a minute to step back and remember what the weekend is about.
Yep, it starts that 100 days of summer. But a great way to start that 100 days is just to stop and be thankful that you can enjoy it and that there was someone before us that made that sacrifice so that we do have freedom. So great conversation, Craig. Thanks so much, and we appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. We strive to bring you quality content each week and look forward to hearing your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us to send us your thoughts. Join us next week when we have a conversation with a longtime Soldier and Family Readiness Group volunteer who happens to be a military spouse. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.